The groundhog says things will warm up soon.
And a couple of new jobs reports say they already have.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in cold and snowy New York, where we hope the groundhog is right.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in sunny and a little milder Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It is Groundhog Day, February 2nd, a Wednesday.
Coming up, what's the economic impact of the big winter storm that's disrupting business and travel across a huge swath of the country? Also, how much would you pay to park in someone's driveway that lives nearby the Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, Texas for the Super Bowl?
But first, the payroll processing firm ADP said this morning that private employers added 187,000 jobs last month. The job placement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas says employers announced just 39,000 job cuts last month. That's the lowest January figure since tracking began in 1993.
Let's bring in John Challenger, the firm's CEO. He joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So on average, John, employers announce about 100,000 job cuts every January. Last month, it was just 39,000. Is this number as good as it seems?
Well, the cuts were up 20% from December, but that was a very low month as well. And it's very unusual because usually what we see is a big spillover effect in January as companies hold off laying people off in the late part of December, and then they move them into January. So this is really a very positive sign.
Where are the job cuts that we did see coming from?
Job cuts are heaviest in the government sector. That area is still in recession, maybe going into further recession. We saw over 6,000 cuts there. The big deficits are inevitably going to lead to more state, local job cuts at that part of the economy.
And what do you think, John, that this means for the big employment report that we're going to get on Friday from the Labor Department?
I think it's a positive signal. Now, the unemployment rate took a big drop from 9.8% to 9.4%. Usually there's an adjustment back when you see that big of a jump. It usually moves in tenths of a percent. But still, all in all, for January and on into 2011, this is a sign that the economy from a labor perspective is getting much better.
Good to hear. John Challenger, CEO of Challenger Gray and Christmas, thanks as always for your time.
Thank you.
Now let's get some reaction to both of this morning's jobs reports from Richard DeKayser. He's an economist with the Parthenon Group. Richard, good morning.
Good morning.
So what's your take on these numbers?
Well, there's no question. They're good. You know, the private sector numbers we got from ADP were especially encouraging, 187,000 during the month of January. Last month in December, we saw a big gain. People were dismissing that as potentially fluky. But you don't get two flukes in a row. So that looks solid. And as you just said, the Challenger numbers are, for January especially, when things tend to be rough, the best we've seen in a very long time.
Well, we spoke with John Challenger, Richard, this morning. We spoke with him, and he said that the cuts that they are seeing or did see in January are coming from state governments and from governments.
Right. And
he said that that could increase as the months go forward, as states try to cut their budgets by a lot. Do you think that could send these jobs numbers going the other direction?
No, I don't. And the simple math is this. State and local governments account for about 15% of our employment base. The private sector is around 83%. Over the past year, private sector payrolls up 1.3%. State and local payrolls down 1.3%. They just don't have the heft and the size to pull the entire economy down. It will be a problem sector, but again, not problematic enough to offset the rest of the economy.
All right. Richard DeKayser, economist at the Parthenon Group. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
On this Groundhog Day, the nation's leading weather authority, Punxsutawney Phil, declared spring is right around the corner. Do you believe it, Jeremy?
Not if you look at the weather outside of New York today.
If reality were so cuddly and cute, like Punxsutawney Phil. Unfortunately, a third of the country is cold and snowy. The latest misery from a storm that stretches from the High Plains states to the Northeast, and flights are canceled. A ton of businesses are closed. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
The economic impact of this massive storm system is huge and diverse, says Louis Uccellini. He's with the National Weather Service. He says there are people missing work, businesses being closed.
Retail sales, lots of flights are being canceled. The impact of these storms definitely range up into the billions of dollars.
Uccellini says cash-strapped cities and states will spend millions just clearing the snow. But it's not all bad news, says Evan Gold with Planalytics.
In advance of the storm, grocery stores, home centers see an increase in foot traffic. The other businesses that obviously do well are online retailers. as well as any restaurant that does delivery.
Gold says this week, sales of hats, gloves, and scarves are up 8% over last year. Sales of rock salt are up nearly 50%. Still, Gold expects the overall economic impact of the storm will be negative. And that's just this storm.
Remember, we still have a lot of winter to go.
In New York, where every inch of snow costs the city $1 million, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Well, as Steve and Stacey both mentioned, flights are being canceled as a result of the big storm. And as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, this could be the worst month ever for cancellations.
The worst month ever was last February, when 20,000 flights were canceled. But just 2 days into this February, we're already at 12,000 and 26 more days to go. Seth Kaplan is with industry publication Airline Weekly. He says this storm is so damaging because it's taken out key connection cities, Chicago and Dallas.
Even if you're trying to go from one place that's not affected to another place that's not affected, you might have a connection there.
He says airlines today would rather cancel flights than risk delays. Why? A brand new law penalizes airlines that strand passengers on the tarmac.
It's just another reason to perhaps say, you know what, let's go ahead and proactively cancel it.
By the way, those penalties for stranding passengers are stiff, $27,000 per customer. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, February 2nd. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world?
There are reports Egypt's government is reopening the internet today, if ever so slowly. That's after President Hosni Mubarak announced he would step down from power later this year. Yet the protests continue in many parts of Egypt, including central Cairo, where the BBC's Gavin Lee is with us now. Hi, Gavin.
Hi.
How are businesses reacting to Mr. Mubarak stepping down later this year?
Well, I think just to look outside, let me tell you where I am. I'm overlooking Tahrir Square. And so many people I spoke to in the square, from such a range of jobs, from doctors to lawyers, lecturers, even fishermen, council workers, the people that should be in the office today, they're not in. They're going to take the next few days off. And I think on a minimum level, the frontline disruption to these services will be felt across Cairo, certainly.
We've heard reports, Gavin, that some shipping companies were or still are rerouting ships away from the Suez Canal to avoid possible disruptions. How has shipping, especially of oil supplies, been affected?
Well, I was on the Sinai Peninsula yesterday, and remember, Egypt isn't a huge oil supplier, but what passes through, of course, at the Suez is a big business. It was the fear factor yesterday. They were running as normal. We're hearing reports as well that they are starting to slow down. There's problems with oil, and again, it starts to wobble the system. Share prices start to wobble as well, and I think it is the fear factor. I must say, I think that the biggest thing, one of the biggest problems, the lack of the internet. Businesses not being able to book things for tourists, for hotels. I think these things start to become a bigger issue as the days progress.
And we hear, Gavin, the internet is back in Cairo and Alexandria. Are you aware of that?
It's certainly not the case at the part of Cairo that I am at the moment. It possibly is in pockets, and the difficulty is, because we have mobile disruption as well, it's very difficult to find out who is back online and who isn't.
Gavin Lee from the BBC in Cairo this morning. Gavin, thank you.
Take care. Speak soon.
To Australia now, where a massive cyclone is hitting the state of Queensland in the north. If that sounds familiar to you, it's because that region was underwater just days ago after torrential rains there. The economic damage could be catastrophic.
Brian Redican is chief economist at Macquarie Bank in Sydney. He's with us on the line for the economic impact of all of this. Good morning, Brian.
G'day. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are companies there and the government of Australia preparing for this storm?
Over the last 3 or 4 days, businesses have been very busily evacuating their stores, sandbagging them, putting boards over windows and masking tape to try to limit the damage that the storm has done. And indeed, some towns have been completely evacuated because alongside the terrific winds of the hurricane will be extreme flooding as well.
Yeah, the country's been hammered by historic flooding. In light of that, Brian, what kind of resources does Australia have available?
This region is used to cyclones, so there are the available resources in the right area. I suppose it's just the intensity of this storm that has got people alarmed. It probably will be the most intense storm in this region for around about 90 years, and it compares to Hurricane Katrina, of course, which devastated New Orleans.
And I remember Katrina, and I remember at that time insurance companies had a very difficult time because of the immense damage there paying out these claims. Do you think insurance companies are going to have trouble in Australia?
Certainly they've been hit both by the floods, as you mentioned, over the last month or so, and this will just be another blow to those businesses. Also, a lot of the smaller businesses, the tourism-related businesses, have been doing it quite tough because the Australian dollar has been very expensive. And again, this is just going to provide another body blow for those businesses that had been struggling. And of course, this region is also a major agricultural producer for Australia. So about 90% of Australia's banana crop is based in this region. With this cyclone, there's a very strong likelihood that the entire banana crop will be wiped out.
All right. Brian Redican, chief economist at Macquarie Bank in Sydney. Thank you.
Okay, then. Thank you. Bye.
The Beatles record label EMI must look longingly back to its heydays of the 1960s, but record profits are now long gone. Today, the debt-laden group has been taken over by Citigroup, and the label could be sold off. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
If there were a top 10 of truly dreadful deals, this might be close to number one. A private equity firm backed by Citi bought EMI for $6.75 billion 3.5 years ago. Today, EMI is worth a fraction of that. Citi's written off most of its loans and the private equity firm's lost all of its investment. They hugely overpaid at a time when record sales were slumping due to illegal downloads. Chris Cook of the CMU music website says that Citi will likely sell off EMI's still lucrative publishing companies.
They own copyrights. They own copyrights in vast numbers of songs and sound recordings. And these copyrights are profitable. They can be turned into cash.
Analysts say Warner Music and the German group BMG could be in the market for what's left of EMI. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Well, Jeremy, in addition to today being Groundhog Day, do you know what else it is today?
No.
It's National Signing Day, of course. Don't you know this?
Oft-forgotten National Signing Day.
College football. Now, that's when high school athletes sign with the universities of their choice for a pretty hefty scholarship. Now, for non-fans, Signing Day is the first day players can actually commit to a school by actually signing something. Hmm. But in this age of the internet, fans want to get in on the action immediately. So there are these webcams set up on college campuses from Tuscaloosa in my home state of Alabama to UW, the University of Washington in Seattle. And these webcams will be pointing to one thing. Fax machine.
Fax machine? Do those even exist anymore?
They do exist. They do exist. And a lot of these webcams are checking out. Like, as these recruits keep coming in and these signatures keep coming in, the webcams will, of course, show them on the computer screen. Good luck in reading that, by the way.
Yeah, we're figuring out how to use those fax machines, students.
Listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, February 2nd. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles on Twitter, by the way, at Radio Chio.
I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York on Twitter at Jeremy Hobson.
You can also give us your feedback by going to marketplace.org and clicking on the link that says contact.
Well, if you haven't already started seeing the new federal tax cuts in your paycheck, you're about to. They went into effect January 1st, but many payroll processors are still catching up. Well, to find out what the tax cuts will mean for the American worker once they do show up, let's bring in LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. Good morning.
Good morning.
So are we about to start feeling really rich with this big payroll tax cut coming through?
Well, to put it in economic terms, not so much. And the reason for that is kind of twofold from the consumer's point of view. On the one hand, yeah, we're going to get a little cut in payroll taxes, but at the same time, gas prices are going up. It's already gas prices above $3 a gallon nationally. Here in California, where I am, it's about $3.20 or so. And with all that unrest in the Middle East, we're already seeing oil prices going up. So the prospect of $4 a gallon, not exactly unreasonable. That's going to put a big bite in a lot of people's money. And at the same time, we had the Department of Agriculture coming out the other day and saying food prices could rise as much as 3% this year. And that's a very big deal. In fact, McDonald's, of all people, just the other day announced that the price of Quarter Pounders and Big Macs and all the rest could be going up very soon because their grocery bill for beef and cheese and whatnot is also rising.
All right, so prices of the things that we buy are rising, but the economy is getting better, right? So shouldn't we have a little more money to spend on these higher-priced goods?
Then you got to parse the numbers again, Jeremy. For instance, the Commerce Department came out the other day and said earnings are up an incremental 0.4%, which sounds good, but they also said that spending is up 0.7%. Now, that's a good thing because of, you know, consumers count for a whole lot of economic activity, but when earnings are up a little bit and spending is up a bit more, the only thing that means is savings is going down. And you know what that means, Jeremy?
We're putting it on the credit card.
We're putting it on plastic. And so if you're in the credit card game, this is a good time for you.
All right, but back to this payroll tax cut, David. Are you saying that it really doesn't mean anything for us?
I wouldn't go that far because the stimulus is going to be holding off even worse economic prospects. So for that extent, that's a good thing. But does it get us out of the woods any faster? I'm not so sure about that.
LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Google unveils a new Android operating system today. It's called Honeycomb. And it's Google's first software designed specifically for tablet computers. From Silicon Valley, Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
In the rush to compete with the iPad, dozens of computer makers, from Dell to Samsung, built tablets running Android software that was designed for phones. Google's new Honeycomb operating system is the company's first real crack at software designed expressly for tablets.
Android is working with multiple hardware partners in multiple regions and with multiple mobile operators.
Neil Motzen is with Strategy Analytics. He says Google wants to take on Apple by getting Android running on as many tablets as possible, rather than building tablets itself. So to make Honeycomb work on lots of different machines, engineers made it simple. Google's Mike Claron says there are no buttons at all.
We were aiming for something that is futuristic but familiar. Everything is 3D, it's controlled by gestures, and information reses in when you need it, and it de-reses when you don't.
Most Google tablets will have touch screens, but Google execs say someday soon, you might be able to hang an Android tablet on your wall and wave at it to get it to work. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
And finally, we are just a few days away from the Super Bowl, Steve, and I'm sure you are going to be watching it closely.
I'm excited.
Are you having a party?
Excited. No, are you kidding me? Yeah, because you have to work at 1 o'clock in the morning the following day. Yeah,
that's
lots
right.
of partying
oh,
at
no.
my house, Jeremy.
Well, all right. But the economic effects of the Super Bowl are already being felt near Cowboy Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Residents are renting out parking spaces in their driveways. No surprise there. But here's the surprise. For as much as $1,000 a spot.
Wow.
Yeah. According to the website TMZ, one woman is even offering up space in her fridge so that tailgaters can store their beer.
No coolers necessary.
That's right. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.